This is Whitney, and you're listening to the JCast on Jabberlog.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with Jabberlog on the JCast, and today I'm sitting with Barry from Dublin, Ireland, and this is episode number 4 of Within the Trenches. What's going on, Barry?
Hi, Ricardo. Thanks for having me on. How are you?
I am doing well. I am very happy that you are joining me here today. For those who don't know, Within the Trenches is a podcast show that is based on the experience of being a 911 dispatcher. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to be able to tell the story of all 911 dispatchers out there, because we all have a story to tell, everything that we've been through. And it's just, it's good to get this information out, especially for the public who don't know exactly what we do. And with Barry here, his name is actually Barry County. And what happened, it's a funny story, actually. And what happened was that he sent me a message on LinkedIn, and it was when I first saw it, I am in Allegan County, and then there's a county to the east of me that is Barry County. So I thought, you know, that it was the agency that was actually sending me a message, and Barry and I had shared a few messages back and forth, and I didn't, not one time did I use his name until just a couple of days ago. It was, have you had that problem where people, I mean, do they tell you right away, is this your actual name or is it the agency?
Oh, you get the kind of belief when people see your name and they go, well, is that actually your name now, or are you joking with me? And especially when you talk to the US-based people and paramedics and dispatchers, and you get the kind of, oh, really? Well, there's a dispatch center near me called the same name, and you have to kind of wonder, are you having me on? Is this a joke? But no, it's actually my name.
Oh, that is awesome, because I straight up felt like a fool, because I thought at first, okay, well, somebody from the neighboring agency is sending me a message saying that they want to be on the show, which is awesome, but I don't know who it is. But then when we started talking more, and then I investigated a little more in your LinkedIn profile, I realized, yep, that is your actual name. So
it's weird to say sometimes, because the counties here as well are called counties. So the districts that you have mm-hmm. are divided into areas called counties. So you have Dublin, you have Meath, Kildare, Belfast, Laois, Offaly, you have Tipperary, you have different places, and they're all called counties. And you get the regular joke then, oh, which one are you from? You know, so it kind of gets old after a while then as well.
Oh, that's funny. Well, so you're joining us today, and we're going to learn about you. This is going to be about your story, you know, the stuff that you've done, the place you work and everything. So tell us what exactly do you do over there? I mean, dispatching, of course, but what kind of dispatching?
Well, basically, I'm a qualified dispatcher. Advanced EMD is the standard through the International Academies of Emergency Medical Dispatch, and that's mm-hmm. the AMPDS system. And for those that don't know, for the public that are listening, that's a triage system that's used anytime that you call 999, 999-911, or 112, as it is here in Europe. And I was working in a frontline emergency dispatch center. So when you call 999 in Ireland and ask for the ambulance service, the person that you get through to would be myself. And I'd be working in the 999 service there. But also I was rotating then between the 999 service as a dispatcher, and then going through to the emergency aeromedical service, which is the helicopter emergency medical service here in Ireland. And I was working in that then for approximately 6 months. Okay. So that was a kind of a unique situation to be in.
Yeah. And then, so during those 6 months, I mean, is that where you're at now, or that was just then?
No, that was then. I've actually moved on from there, because we were only on a short-term contract. Okay. Unfortunately, we were only applied for 6 months, so we had to kind of move on from there, sadly.
So where are you at now then?
Well, I'm back to doing what I always did. Before I got into the ambulance service, I was working in event first aid and event paramedics. So I'd be the first aid provider at an event of any kind, like from a concert or festival or anything like that. That's what I was doing prior to the ambulance service. So I've gone back to gnawing on the old bone as it is.
Oh, that sounds great. We were talking a little bit earlier, and you mentioned, and I even saw it as well within your profile when I was looking up some information. It had to do with Aeromed, and that's so it's Aeromed dispatching, is it, or how would you describe it?
You describe it as a number of things, really, but the official title for it is an emergency aeromedical service. Excuse me, dispatch.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're working in a live 999 center, which is a live dispatch environment. You're in a separate desk to the rest of the center, but you're also acting in two roles. So you're working as an aeromedical dispatcher, and then you're working as a 999 controller for overflow of calls. If it's a case that so many calls are received at the same time, you have to go ahead and help your partners out. So I was working as an emergency aeromedical service controller.
Mm-hmm.
And what that comprises of is basically controlling any medical air asset in Ireland that's needed for either emergencies, air ambulance missions, which is inter-hospital facilities,
okay,
or inter-hospital transfers between facilities, or there's the kind of mission that you would have using the Coast Guard helicopters if it's a case that it's in a remote location or you have a patient on an offshore island or a similar location that you need medical assistance for. So as you can see, there's a vast sort of variety of everything that you could be doing from the time you go in the morning. And some days you go in the morning and you get a handover from your colleague who has been working last night and actually received a request, and you have to go ahead and then action that then during your shift.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so, you know, it relies a lot on close communication, as you can imagine.
Right.
Making sure that you get the right information from your colleagues so that you can go ahead and activate the air asset then during the day. And that would be for the likes of a patient going to the UK for a specialist kind of treatment, like a transplant or something, that they have to go to a certain facility. As you can imagine, Ireland being a small country that it is, we don't have some of the advanced medical procedures that need to be done here. And we actually send our patients to the UK to do some of them. So specialist pediatric surgeries and stuff like that are done in the UK. So you'd have to go ahead then and activate your air assets, be that public through the Irish Air Corps, the Air Force, or through private air providers if the case was that the Irish Coast Guard or the Air Force weren't available to do it. You have to go ahead and activate a private service then.
Wow, so you're doing this all the time, where a lot of us here in the States, or I guess in the smaller areas like myself, you know, it's rare that we get a lot of these calls where we get to, you know, to dispatch Aeromed. You know, it's got to be a real bad accident or something that's going on like that, that we would activate them. And usually when we make that phone call, you know, we call into their dispatch and they ask, you know, a few different things having to do with the weather. And if, you know, our fire department is out there to do the LZ or the landing zone.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's all we hear. You know, if it's somewhere close to our dispatch center, we can hear it or see the lights. But other than that, you know, we don't get that much contact with it. But you know, you're there all the time. And that sounds pretty, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it can be. It can be very satisfying sometimes. You know, the missions that I did, you know, helped an awful lot of people that normally wouldn't have been able to receive the treatment in the time that they needed. Mm-hmm. For example, we had a gentleman one day who presented to a healthcare facility with chest pain. And it turned out then, once the doctor had assessed him and done a 12 lead, that it was actually a STEMI. A STEMI, for those that would be listening, is a certain kind of heart attack that needs treatment within a certain time frame of 90 minutes to ensure that they get, you know, full recovery of the heart tissue and everything else, because essentially it's a part of the heart that's blocked and not working properly.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't get to a certain facility in a certain time, then the potential is then that they could either go into cardiac arrest or not recover the amount of tissue that they should be able to recover. So, you know, activating the emergency helicopter that day ensure that that patient got to hospital well within the time frame. And even the paramedic on the helicopter, the advanced paramedic, turned around and complimented me for activating in the time frame that I did, because it turned out that the patient was actually, as they were handing over, they don't go in through the regular, you know, emergency department. They go straight to the cath lab, the catheter lab, and they went straight there, and it was actually being done as they were handing the patient over to the hospital. The procedure had started, you know.
Wow.
And that saved an awful lot of time for that patient. So sometimes you get the calls that really make a difference like that. And then you get the calls for a patient on an island, let's say, that has chest pain, or a patient, you know, on an island that needs to go to the mainland because, you know, they fell off a cliff and they broke their leg, or they're in an inaccessible location on the island.
Oh, geez.
And you have to access the Coast Guard then for that.
Right.
So it can be variant, you know. You can get one call a day. Uh-huh. You can get three calls a day. It really just depends on the day.
Wow. So then, even if it's, like you were saying, it depends on the day, you get one or, you know, two or whichever. Those calls are pretty, are they pretty drawn out? And I mean that in a sense that there's a huge process, or does it just go right through smooth?
Well, it can depend on the type of call. I mean, when you get a call that's within your operational area, well, at least then you know how many ambulances you have available to transfer the patient at the other end into the hospital.
Gotcha.
Whereas if you get a call that's not within your operational area, let's say it's outside your counties, well, then you have to call the operational centers in those areas to make sure that they have ambulances available, you know, both to transfer the patient at the other end and then some to load the patient into the aircraft itself. Okay. So it can be kind of difficult to understand sometimes what resources are available. Some calls can be as quick as an hour. Some can take up to 3 hours, depending on where it is and what happens.
Right. Okay. So then, you're dispatching the Aeromed. Do you do ambulance as well then? Do you guys do it all, or is there, do you transfer it to a different center?
It's in the same center, except for the Aeromed would be from a different desk.
Oh,
so the Aeromed is a different desk within the 911 center.
Gotcha. Okay. Oh, that makes sense then.
And if it's a case then that you get overflow calls, let's say, from the 999 service, then you can take those calls as a trained controller then as well.
Gotcha. So then have you taken any of those calls where they're just dumb calls that come in, like we all have taken?
Oh, don't you know it? That's part of the job, isn't it? That you have to do it.
Yeah. So, and you know, I meant to ask you right in the beginning, but how did you learn about the show?
Well, basically, I was doing a search for different shows that were on. Like, I've seen the Medicast and podcasts and stuff like that. And it was kind of a new thing to me, because I would download periodically, you know, just to kind of keep a track on what's going on in the grand scheme of things in the USA with the advances that are happening in, you know, STEMI care. I mean, with the likes of Code STEMI and stuff like that. So I found out about then through LinkedIn. I was actually doing a search on different dispatcher desks or groups to join, and I actually found yourself there. So that's awesome. What I got in touch then.
Oh, that's great. You know, I had been putting messages on there for a while, and then, you know, nothing, there was never, you know, a mention. And then, you know, I got that email from you, and I thought, wow, that's great. You know, this is going to be very interesting, because I've never, to be completely honest, I had never heard of, I mean, of course, you know, 911 dispatching and everything is pretty much going to be the same anywhere, but, being that you're from Ireland, this is just, it's blowing my mind, really, because, you know, the type of dispatching that you're doing with, you know, with Aeromed and everything else, that's just awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know, you don't get support from, let's say, Allegan County or anything like that, and then suddenly you get someone from Ireland that wants to go on the show.
Yeah. And the story that you were telling me about how you got the recognition, that's great, because, you know, as you know, and everybody else who's listening to this who is in the same profession, we don't always get that recognition. You know, it's not a job that we don't want to be thanked all the time, but in a job like this, every now and then being thanked is a huge thing. What do you think about
that? Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, certainly when you get calls that, you know, it's a bad injury or if it's a bad situation and then you don't get the recognition or you don't get to hear about the patient that happens. I mean, you do a thankless job. You know, you sign up for that at the beginning and you're told, you know, you don't get thanked or you don't get, you know, kudos or a pat on the back from the patients or the callers or anything like that. And, you know, a lot of the time then you get abused or you get name called or anything like that. So it can be difficult sometimes to do it. Tough call and not to hear how the patient got on in the end, you know?
Yeah, I think that's probably what one of the hardest thing is with our job is that, you know, you take a bad call and you don't get that closure, you know, because you go straight to the next call. I know I've taken many calls where, you know, I've been given CPR on the phone and then the ambulance checks out there and they take over and I go right to the next call and it could be, you know, a stabbing call or a gunshot or something. And I never get that, that closure. So sometimes when it's pretty bad, you know, it'll stick with me. And then, you know, like doing this, that's one of the things or one of the reasons I should say that I wanted to do this show because we don't always get closure for ourselves or we don't always have someone to talk to about our calls because, you know, you could talk to somebody else and that's not in the profession and they'll just kind of look at you and say, you know, I'm really not sure what to tell you, you know, because they don't understand.
Yeah, and definitely. And you get that kind of disbelief of, oh, did you actually do that? You know, is that what you do for a living? And you kind of have to say, well, yeah, I do. You know, I signed up voluntarily for it. You know, I wasn't dragged kicking and screaming to do it. So it's kind of something that they look at you sideways and go, you really do CPR over the phone. You really do give instructions to people. And it's kind of difficult. You know, all they see in the end is the ambulance showing up with two paramedics on board. They don't see what goes on behind the ambulance, so to speak, or, you know, how did the ambulance get there in the first place?
Yeah. They don't know that we are the first responders.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I was looking at an article there recently about stress in dispatch. And it turns out that part of the stress in dispatch is, you know, the non-closure. You don't get feedback of what happened. You don't get the closure of, you know, knowing sometimes what happened to the patient. And especially when it is a cardiac arrest or if it's a child patient that's seriously hurt, you really do need that kind of, you know, knowing how the patient got on, even if it is the case that they've sadly passed away or, you know, if it's a case that they've been transferred to a different facility, at least you know then, you know, that you've done the best that you can or that you did follow protocol correctly and that they did make it, you know, and it's sometimes tough to do, especially if you take a call just before you leave or just before your shift ends and then you have to go home and think about it, you know?
Yeah. I know if I've taken a call, excuse me, that is pretty bad, you know, right at the end there, I'm driving home, it's just me. Even if I have music on or something, it's still in my head, you know. Luckily, you know, we were kind of talking about it earlier before the show that there's the family, like, how am I trying to put this here? the way that we interact with everybody out, like for me at least, out on the road, you know, the officers, fire department, paramedics, and everything else, you know, we're so close that we at least have them that we're able to talk to. And I know you were talking to me about how, you know, some of them will come in and they'll sit there and talk to you, you know, have a cup of coffee or whatever. You know, it's good to have that type of relationship with the workers that are out there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's always nice to find the face that you're always talking to over the radio and sit down and, you know, introduce yourself and have that kind of camaraderie. And then, you know, like if it is the case that, you know, a bad incident happens, like a multi-casualty incident, and you have to go to a stress debrief with them, at least you have the previous kind of meeting and you know them. And you know them personally then enough to know how they're going to react with the situation. And at least you can call them and say, look, I know you've just been out to that call. You know, are you okay? How are you doing? Do you want to go and take a quick break and then come back to me and let me know how you're doing? We have enough crews to cover you for the moment, you know, just to let you go in and have that cup of coffee. And at least they know then they have, you know, not just a voice over a radio that doesn't care. You have the kind of personal end of dispatching then as well.
Yeah, definitely. I know I took I took a call once where I won't go into a lot of detail because it's kind of a downer call, but I'll just say that, you know, it really hit me because, you know, it had to do with a child. And, you know, I've got a couple of kids, and it's calls like that where, you know, you relate to the people and you put yourself almost in that situation. And when you're done with the call, and if you don't have that closure, it just really bites. And with that call specifically, one of the sergeants came up immediately after the call, and or at least after they were done with their investigation and everything. He ended up coming up and he sat next to me and he says, are you okay? Are you going to be all right? And I said, yeah, you know, I just need to know exactly what happened. I said, I know you can't give me a lot of detail. I said, but I just need that little bit of closure so that I can continue, because that was right in the middle of my shift and we were really busy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would have tore me up for the rest. You know, I would have stayed professional and done my job like I always do, because that's what I'm there to do. But inside, it was killing me. So for him to come up and to be able to talk to me about it and everything, that was great. That is exactly what I needed, because after he told me, I had that closure and, you know, I was able to move on.
And it's always nice to get that, you know. And even down the line, you know, I had the habit of making a note of certain calls that they had been on that I was maybe had been affected by when I went home, or, you know, that I was thinking about on the way home. And then I'd get there and I'd think about it, and, you know, you kind of naturally forget about it when you're at home, and you go back in the next day and it's kind of slipped your mind. But then you open your notebook and work and you see the incident number and you say, okay, you know, I'll ask that crew because they're on today, how that went, right? Because I need to know. It's nice to know that you're kind of doing the right things and making sure that you are, you know, sending the right amount of resources, the right resources to send, and that you have the people there that, you know, you've did the right thing, you know. And even just asking the paramedics, you know, how did that patient end up in the end? Yeah. You know, and especially with child patients, like, you know, it's always kind of good to see that you have done the right thing and that they did turn out okay in the end, you know.
Yeah, that's no, I know exactly what you mean. It definitely helps us. And for everybody who's listening right now, you know, dispatcher wise, and I guess even anybody, you know, you're at work and stuff like that happens, you need to know. Yeah, you need that closure, and it's always good to have that. So we're talking about, you know, different stories and everything. And you had said that you wanted to go with your best stories, and that was one of them that you had said earlier. What other stories do you have? Anything else? I mean, why did you get into the field that you're in the first place? How did that even come down?
Well, as I said, I mean, you're not dragged kicking and screaming into dispatch. Yeah. You kind of have to willingly choose to go into it. And at the time that I was applying for the job, I was kind of in between choosing, you know, do I go into a career in dispatch or do I go into a career as a paramedic? Mm-hmm. You know, as a trained EMT, I was kind of sitting there going, well, it'd be easier for me to go into, you know, being a paramedic because the skill sets are pre-hospital and, you know, before everything happens. Right. And I decided, I saw the job posting for a dispatch, and I said, you know, that's always something I've liked to try, because, you know, your whole life you're surrounded by dispatchers and you make the call to the dispatcher, you know, when you need a paramedic or when you need an ambulance at an event, or, you know, if you come across something. And I was always interested to kind of find out, you know, what happens when you call, you know, what kind of training do they have? How does it happen from that end? So I suppose I was always interested in helping people. I was always interested in being a medic. So I decided, you know, I'll go ahead and try this out and see how it works out. And it turned out to be one of the most enjoyable things I've ever done.
Oh, that's great. So then how long have you been doing this then?
Not too long. I mean, I only started doing it last year. Okay. I was qualified as a dispatcher during the summer there last year, and I worked for that for 6 or 7 months before I finished the contract that I was on. Okay. So I'm still qualified as a dispatcher, both as the aeromedical service and the EMD certification, but I'm no longer actively practicing it, unfortunately.
Gotcha. I was going to ask you one more question. It slipped my mind.
Luckily enough, that never happens when we're taking calls as dispatchers.
Oh, I know, right? That it's odd. And I posted earlier when I was right before we got on, when I got the time wrong. When I got the time wrong, I had posted that, you know, I was getting nervous. And for these past few episodes, I've been getting nervous, and I don't know why right before an episode that I get nervous. And someone posted, I had said as well, you know, I'm never like this on a 911 call. So what's going on? You know, with the 911 calls, that they can be horrific calls, and I'm completely calm. And
yeah, it's as if you're watching the TV or, you know, talking to your friend on the phone. It's the next thing to nature that could be, you know, you're kind of just sitting there taking the details and people are telling you absolutely horrific things. And yet you're the most calm person they'll ever talk to in their life.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of weird to see that sometimes people get nervous when, you know, they do the normalest of things, whereas when the 911 call rings, you're kind of, oh, you know, there's another call, you know, I better answer this. And it's, you know, the next thing to normal. So,
yeah, there are some times though, when, if we pick up the phone, if we hit the button before we pick up the handset, we can hear on the speaker what is going on. So, you know, we'll have this little red light that pops up and it'll say incoming call on the screen. And, you know, if there's nothing going on, everybody is racing to get the phone because, you know, we want to do something.
Yeah, exactly.
As odd as that sounds, because we're bored. That's just a little dark humor for those who don't work in the profession. and the dark humor is something that we need, you know, sometimes to get through a shift.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, when you're quiet and the phone rings, you know, you have two or three people going for the phone at the same time, and two of them will get the dialing tone and then the other one will actually get the call. Yeah. And sometimes the person that gets the call then will not realize that they have got the call and they'll think that someone else has got it. Right. So it's sometimes funny to see, you know, three people racing for the phone and one of them isn't sure who's got it, you know?
Yeah, and then you end up, it's happened before on not 911 calls, but just like the seven digit lines, the non-emergency calls.
Yeah.
We'll each go to pick it up and everyone will say, oh, I didn't get it. Well, then who got it? Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
I accidentally hung up on the person then.
And the phone rings again and it's, you hung up on me. And no, I didn't get the call. That wasn't me.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. It just, the phone dropped. I'm calling from a landline, not a cell phone. Oh. Well, then I don't know what happened.
Yeah, it's always funny to see. You know, I remember one of the funniest moments that ever happened, and it's probably the most embarrassing of things that could happen with the dispatcher. We were using the mics in the control room, and it turned out that the button actually jammed, and all the ambulances and crews in the area could actually hear what we were talking about live on the air.
Oh no.
You know, and when that includes some of your senior supervisors and officers and everything else, you're kind of embarrassed to hear. And so we had to kind of make a joke of it and just kind of pass it on, but it was extremely embarrassing at the time, you know.
Oh, I bet.
God forbid we had actually been talking about one of the crews, you know, thankfully we weren't, or thankfully we hadn't said anything that we shouldn't have, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We have several times where, the person, especially on main radios, cause the way we have it set up in our center, we've got on one side, it's two call takers. And then on the other side of the room, it's, we've got our main radios for law enforcement. And then, next to them is the person who pretty much backs up everybody. They're the lien operator, and they run, all the, like the license plates and the warrant checks and everything else. Well, and then the call takers, they take, the radio for ambulance and fire department, but the main, radio operator for law enforcement, there have been times where we've been talking on the radio and the button will get stuck, just like you were saying. And, you know, we're sitting there like, open mic. And they'll say, what? And like, open mic, your mic is open. And like, oh no. And, you know, they've been talking smack the whole time or something, or, you know, someone will start slamming on the button to try to make it get unstuck. And then the officers will key up, busting up laughing, saying, are you guys all right up there?
Yeah, they kind of have to wonder, are they dealing with sane controllers, or are we kind of in the madhouse?
Yeah, there was one time recently too that I had keyed up on one of the secondary channels to talk to somebody, and I thought I had let go of the button, but that one got stuck, and I'm just talking away, and people are sending messages, and I'm reading them, and I said, oh, open mic, who has an open mic? And then someone sends another message, you have an open mic. And I'd look to the left and, oh man.
we deal with top of the range equipment, as you know.
Yeah. Yeah, don't we? Yeah, exactly. Some of that stuff has been there for many, many years and should probably get an update, but what can you do, you know?
Well, that's for another podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe with all of this, you know, we can get some sponsors and get some new equipment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's funny to see sometimes that, you know, you're talking to some of the people that come in to repair the radios or to repair, you know, different IT systems and stuff like that. And you're talking to them and, you know, because certain things, like with the amount of traffic that you'd have, like certain things just tend to kind of break down every now and again. It's a natural state of how it works.
Right.
And you're talking to the tech people that are kind of fixing that. And it's funny to see that, you know, you mention it to them about the radio jamming or the thing, and they tell you a story then about a similar thing that has happened somewhere else, you know. So it's a commonality that happens, and
yeah,
it's kind of funny sometimes, you know. And thankfully they're transitioning to a new system here, whereby you'll have a secure radio that can't be listened to by the public. So, you know, the way you have like VHF radios and stuff.
Oh,
like that.
Right. Yeah,
and the new system that's coming in then, mm-hmm, is secure, GSM based. So it's actually based on a cell network as opposed to a radio.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's something that has been used by the police force here for, I think it's 6-7 years now. And the EMS and fire haven't got it yet, but hopefully they are soon. And basically that means then that the public won't be able to talk or won't be able to hear the stations or hear any of the calls going out and stuff like that, because that would be how a lot of news reporters and stuff like that get their information here, as you can imagine.
Yeah, I wonder what it would take for us to get something like that, because we have definitely had calls where, you know, we'll have our officers, our drug enforcement teams, they're going out to houses, and they'll call us up on the phone first, and they'll say, okay, this is where we're going to be at. We're not going to say anything on the radio, and we don't want you guys to say anything on the radio either, because we have heard that the people that we're looking into are listening to us off of an app on their cell phone.
And, really? Jesus.
Yeah. So there was a couple times where there was some drag racing that was going on. It's got to be about 3 or 4 years ago now that this happened. And it was in the middle of the night. And it was going on for a whole week. Well, when it got to the last day, we finally figured out, or I don't know how they figured out, one of the detectives that was going out there with the rest of the police officers had said, you know, he called up and he said, this is where we're going. They're listening to us on an app. So you need to, or actually they had a different scanner. I don't know how they were doing it now, but they were listening to us. So they got out there, and then you just hear a yell over the radio saying, they're running. And so
you kind of have to wonder how they knew they were coming.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So then, and then now, you know, with all these apps that are coming out and everything, people will call up and they'll say, look, we heard you, on my phone, and this is going on. Is there anything that I need to be worried about? Okay, well, this is all going on right now. I don't know what to tell you right now. Just, I guess, stay in your house.
Stay in and listen to the radio, and we'll make an announcement shortly or something, you know.
Yeah.
It's always funny to see, because I was actually listening to your service yesterday via a free app that you can get on the App Store. So,
yeah,
as you say, it is crazy that people are just listening in on, you know, free apps on their iPhones or whatever else.
Yeah, it's very interesting how they do that. And a lot of people making 99 cents or whatever off of every app that comes out, and they're able to listen to them. So I guess, I don't know, more power to you then. But you know, and then, yeah, the news, you know, we'll get the news that calls up, and they'll say, okay, so are you guys working a fire? Yeah. Okay, well then, where is it at? And as they ask where it's at, I can hear my partner who's toning out over the radio, and I can hear the echo through the phone. And they get all quiet, and I'll say, I can hear my partner toning it over the radio. I'm sure you got the information. Okay, well, we have to confirm it. Well, I can't confirm anything now without a release. So with your network that you guys are hooking up, that sounds like it could be really, really good for that.
Well, I hope so, because every EMS provider, like every paramedic, will have his own personal issue. Every ambulance will have its own radio. And then eventually what they're kind of working at is that the EMS, fire and police will be able to switch onto one channel or one frequency if it's a case that there's a major emergency. So you don't have to go through multiple providers, mm-hmm, to get the information. You can call the other unit, or you can call, you know, whoever you need to call, and dispatch will be able to hear you as well. So, I mean, even with the likes of, as you say, the journalists and the news people calling up about calls, I mean, we've had that in the past where a journalist will call up and ask for details when, you know, the greatest excuse that I could use was, well, you know, you're calling up about information, you're calling the wrong person. You've called the 999 center here and you're blocking up an emergency line. Now, I'm afraid I'm going to have to let you go. Goodbye. You hang up on them because that is the best thing that you can do, because it's legitimate. They are blocking up an emergency line.
Right.
And, you know, if that had called, then, you know, it would ring out and you're still talking to someone that wants to know about something so they can send it into their local newspaper or whatever, you know. So it's kind of the age-old battle that we have against journalists, you know.
Yeah, it's funny because I've got I have 2 months left of my master's that I'm trying to get through school, and it's in new media journalism. So it's funny.
So you're both the enemy and the friend.
Yeah, there you go. but that actually, you know, if I hadn't done that, it would not have. I wouldn't be doing what we're doing right now. So, and in my, you know, aspect of the new media journalism, it's going to be like what I'm doing now with the podcasting and covering, you know, stories and everything, but it won't be to the extent that we've dealt with, you know.
And it was strange to see, you know, I mean, I dealt with a large incident here last year, which was a multi-vehicle collision, and a number of people had died in the collision. And, what had happened was that the news had actually broken via people that had actually reached the scene and had called the various news outlets or had rang a friend, and the friend had put it up on, you know, Facebook or Twitter or something like that, and the news had actually spread that way. So it's crazy to see that, you know, some of the social media things are actually getting a hold of the story even before the journalists are awake and at the computer, you know.
Yeah, that's you know, all of the common, you know, the journalists, the people that are out there just with their phones and everything, just snapping shots. And yeah, I've seen that as well. Now, a lot of the websites around here for the local news, they have their own sections where they'll say, if you catch a story, send us your pictures or send us your information, and we'll go out there and take it, because all of these stories are breaking and everyone has a phone with a camera. And, you know, the pictures are so great now, the quality, even the video, that, yeah, of course they would jump on that. But yeah, I see that a lot more now, that, you know, they're reaching out to the people to say, if you've got tips, you know, hook us up with a picture or video.
I mean, it's absolutely crazy. I was traveling to a training session there last year, and as I got off the train, I was looking across, and it was literally 30 seconds after a commuter tram had hit a truck, and there was obviously a number of people injured and everything. So I went towards the area to start to help. But by that time, the amount of resources that had arrived, the ambulances were arriving, the fire service and everything. So they had what they needed. And obviously, when you walk up towards the scene, you see people taking pictures and everything. And the police that were there had to say, look, you know, there's a number of people injured. This isn't the right thing to do. Can you, right, you know, back away so we could seal off the area? And it turns out that the pictures that the people were taking actually broke the news, like, because they put them up on social media. That was how the journalists actually first learned of the incident happening.
Jeez.
You know, so it's crazy to see the speed that things are happening at when you don't even have time to react and seal off the scene. The pictures are already up online.
Yeah, that is definitely crazy. And then, you know, you've got the people there that are taking the pictures and they're getting in the way. So yeah, like you were saying, you know, the police telling them this is not the thing to do. Of course it's not the thing to do, because, you know, they're in the way of the, you know, the ambulance or whoever's coming in to help, you know, the ones who are there to help when there's people taking all these pictures. And you have to tell them, get out of here.
Yeah, exactly. And in the best way possible, because they're always recording a video for use. But it's just crazy to see that sometimes, you know, things break via social media that the news outlets will only have 20, 30 minutes later on. And especially, you know, when you approach the scene of an accident, it's strange to see the change in people's minds now that, you know, they record things instead of actually getting stuck in and help people like they used to, you know.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of sad then, you know, to think.
Yeah, definitely. Way. I mean, when you approach an accident or when you see something happening, you know, people have the tripod positioned, their two arms raised, and they're looking at through the camera and they're recording what they're recording. You know, they're, you know, it could be someone's relative, it could be someone dead, it could be anything, and they're, you know, they have the tripod positioned and they're recording away.
Yeah, that would be the worst way to find out. You know, someone come up to you and say, hey, you got to check out this video that was just posted, they're live streaming it right now, and then, you know, it end up being a family member. that's just a harsh way to go.
Well, that's the fear, isn't it? I mean, it's crazy to see. And even a lot of, you know, the US-based systems have live streaming of their paging systems. So some of the fire departments have actually started streaming, you know, as the pager call goes out, it goes up live onto Twitter or Facebook.
Oh, wow.
And so the public can know then.
Wow, that's definitely interesting.
It's scary, you know, the information that can be posted straight away. But in a way, it has its positive aspect because when people see, you know, six fire engines racing by, they can look on this page and they see, oh, well, it's 301 South Avenue is on fire. Mm-hmm. You know, at least I know then that the person that I was thinking of is safe, you know.
Right. Yeah, it definitely could help because then, you know, maybe that's the way they're thinking then, you know, if we post this right away, we're not going to have people chasing our ambulance or our fire department to go and see what's going on. They'll know first what's going on and then carry on. So, yeah, I can see that. I can see where it would be, there would be some positives to it. It's just those other ones who want to get that picture or that video in there. So we are coming up to about the end here, and I was wondering, is there anything from your, you know, from our profession or anything that you would want anybody who's just getting into it or thinking about it to know?
I suppose the one thing that you have to know when you're getting into this profession is listen to the people around you, the people that have been doing it for a long time, and always remain calm. You know, listen to the people that are telling you what to do, or that are talking to you from experience, and always remain calm, because people call, you know, the emergency services or the public safety because they want to hear someone that knows what they're talking about, that knows what to do and can tell you what to do. They don't necessarily care, you know, about what you know or what you have to send, as long as you know, remain calm with them, tell them what to do, and ensure that you get the right care to the right person. I mean, that's the basic, you know, things is what we do. So the advice to anybody that's coming into the job is just remain calm, listen to the people around you, and always rely on your training of what you've done.
Excellent. Now that is great. That is great advice, because I've had, since I started this, there have been some people that have sent messages to me asking the same thing. So what I wanted to do, and it's really starting, it was an episode, actually, I think I've been doing it maybe throughout this whole time. I just want everybody who I talk to here on these shows to let people know, you know, what to think about when they're getting into this on our aspect. And I think actually one of the other dispatchers I spoke to in a previous podcast, they actually had a message for people calling us to help us out so that we could help them. So, you know, what you said just now, that's great advice. And I thank you very, very much, Barry, for joining me.
Well, no worries at all, Ricardo, and thanks for having me. And I suppose the other thing that I would say for anybody that's thinking of doing the job is you have to realize that it is long hours for what you do, and it can be stressful sometimes, but always remember that the next call could be the most rewarding thing that you ever do in your life. So always be on the positive end of things when you're thinking of going into a career in dispatch.
Definitely. So for the show, you can reach me, anybody who's listening right now, you can reach me on Twitter, and there's two different ones. And what I realized was that I had been telling everybody you can reach me on Twitter at RM2Visions, the number 2. Well, just like I messed up with your name between the agency and the person, I had given the wrong Twitter handle. So it's actually RM Roman numeral 2 Visions. And so I apologize to anybody out there who's listening right now who was trying to get a hold of me through this Twitter handle that I gave that's not real. it's RM2 Visions, but the number 2 is actually a Roman numeral 2, so 2 capital I's. Or you can reach me through the blog Twitter handle. It's at Jabberlug, so RM2 Visions or at Jabberlug. And all of these episodes are located on iTunes, on Stitcher, and you can find it on my blog, thejabberlog.com. And also, if you have Facebook, like us on Facebook. We are doing a giveaway right now between Jabberlug and Threadzy, and I designed the logo, but the company Threadzy are the ones that I got the t-shirts from, and they do an excellent thing. So you've got to look them up with this giveaway and everything that we're doing, and all of that will be on the blog post when I post this up. So everybody have a good one, and Barry, I Once again, I thank you very much for joining me for episode number 4.
No worries, Ricardo. Thank you.
You just listened to Within the Trenches on the JCast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to thejcast@thejabalog.com.